Tonight on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, Tommy Wang of MAC, Modern Asian Kitchen. And now with more, here's your host, Patty Vasquez.
You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Scott Santis is dancing up a storm, just getting crazy.
You can't help it.
You can't get crazy. We have a new friend of the show, Representative Juliana Stratton, joins us. And you have recently been sworn into your first term as a representative for the state of Illinois. Representing which district again?
Fifth District, right where we are right now.
We are your constituents, kind of. Well, at least our landlords
sort of,
are.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And an interesting seat that you take over. But I'm curious about you because this is so Duncan was an interesting character. If anyone watched the speech when President Obama was in Springfield, he told Duncan to sit down. Basically said, sit your ass down was what he said to him.
I don't think he said ass.
I know, but I heard it. That's okay. What I heard. That's how the media
works. It
was
implied. Works. Ass was implied.
You can say one thing and I'll hear another. But you are a fascinating representative now to me because you changed the dynamic in a very bizarre time in our state's history. Tell me, what drew you to serving the public?
Well, I've actually been in public service for all of my career, really. So thank you for that question, because I like being able to say, for those who think this was sort of a new development in my career, that no, this has been what I've done. I'm an attorney, and I practiced with a small firm for a couple of years out of law school, and then I started my own practice as a mediator and an arbitrator. An administrative judge. And in all of the agencies that I worked doing that type of work, they were all governmental agencies. So I worked for the city's Department of Business Affairs and Consumer Protection, the city's Commission on Human Relations, the Illinois Department of Human Rights, the United States Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the United States Postal Service, and the list goes on, always working in areas where I could somehow try to make life better for residents of the city, county, or state. In 2011, I then joined the administration of Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle as the executive director of her Justice Advisory Council, working on issues relating to criminal and juvenile justice reform and trying to reduce the population at the Cook County Jail. And so 2011 was also when I became a delegate for the Illinois Women's Institute for Leadership, which is a program that trains women to run for office statewide. It was started by Loretta Durbin, the wife of Senator Dick Durbin. So at that time, I was just really interested in thinking about how I could broaden my reach as someone who was serving the public. And this opportunity came up, and I took the plunge and ran for office.
And all that experience really has to inform, you know, the decisions you're going to be making in the legislature. And in particular, when it comes to how the different branches, the bureaucracy works, when it comes to dealing with people's individual needs. If you're working in these court cases and as an arbitrator, I'm not sure if I'm using the correct language, there's so much that goes into having the debates, having the discussion is the part that I'm always compelled to really sit and listen to. Representative Feigenholz laughs at me because whenever, like, Representative Gordon had introduced a bill several weeks ago about the trauma center recovery for victims, also how we rehabilitate our inmates. And when she was introducing that bill, Scott, like, no one was paying attention to her. And so I don't know, do you watch them? I mean, like, everyone's talking, there's a lot of chaos. But it seems to me only when certain people are speaking. And that was something that I started taking pictures of everyone not paying attention to Representative Gordon, because when Representative Durkin stood up, everyone got quiet. I'm like, this seems a little strange. Hmm. So have you watched some of that dynamic?
Well, so I got sworn in on January 11th, mm-hmm. and we had one day in session that week, full day in session. And then this week we had a couple of days, including one which was the State of the State address by Governor Rauner. So I haven't,
you haven't rolled up your sleeves yet.
We're just getting started. Yeah. So, but it's an interest. It is an interesting place to be, and I'm very honored, really, to serve in this capacity.
What was the first day like? When they have an orientation for you and like walk you around? Here's where the bathrooms are. Here's your office. Sort of.
There's a little bit of that.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of baptism by fire, but you know, you kind of figure out where everything is, and everybody's really helpful. I mean, I can say that people are willing to answer questions. all of my colleagues who have been there, they're very helpful. So it's been a good experience so far.
That's a great question. I've always wondered, like, state reps or state senators or congressmen, I mean, is there orientation? I mean, do they sit you, I mean, a freshman class, how many in your class?
I think there were 16 in total, and I can't quite figure out if that's all 16 who just started or if it includes those who were also appointed some point in midterm last session. But yeah, I mean, there's a orientation. You kind of get a little the lay of the land, and like I said, kind of figure out where the bathroom is and everything.
Yeah.
So it's you know,
which is important.
They don't want you to come in completely just clueless. So but much of it you don't know until you're in the seat.
Really?
And you start going
like
through the
what?
Process. Well, I mean, the process of a bill becoming a law. You have to figure that process out. It's not something somebody can just teach you. You know, you have to figure out how those negotiations go and the relationships
that
you
have. The rhythm of it. Even the,
yeah,
the
exactly.
rhythm of it is that's why you have to come down and watch.
I need to.
Everybody needs to go sit in that gallery and watch how this
I would love to.
How
are you going down next? We keep talking about this.
Well, they may have there's talk of possibly an emergency session next week in reflection of Lisa Madigan, I believe, submitting a request to remove the injunction and so that no state employees will be paid anymore since they don't have a budget. So rather than just not paying, so right now Comptroller Mendoza is not issuing checks to the legislators because she's putting them at the back of the line, as Comptroller
right.
Munger had. This would make sure that no one gets paid. That is employed by
That's
the
a motivator.
State of Illinois. But for whom and why? I mean, it's holding hostage. It's not how democracy works. You don't hold our legislators hostage because someone's not getting what they want. They need to be doing their job. I mean, I understand because so what? So this is not. It's not a democracy. Some people are not living off of the entire. They're not. They're paying $62,000 a year.
No,
which
no,
I understand.
No. But don't misunderstand me. Having pissed off people mm-hmm. motivate elected officials.
Pissed off people can. If people are calling their legislators, that's one way to motivate them.
That's one way, but that's not happening.
And voting them out of office is a way to, because they
that's
have an opportunity in November.
Either. That's not happening either.
So, but withholding their pay and holding them hostage for what? They have submitted a budget. They have done their. They have done their job. The governor is not, and yes, he's not being paid because he's a billionaire. He just donated $50 million. Okay, this is a different conversation altogether.
Sorry,
the President of the United States has threatened to send the feds in.
What does that mean?
Boots on the ground. I have no idea, so we'll talk about that when we come back.
Look at the lawyer.
I don't think it was, well, I was saying I don't think it's clear. I mean, feds...
We have feds.
And
The FBI has a headquarters here. The DEA is working in these mm-hmm. neighborhoods.
We're all fed up.
Okay, more after this. I can't go on a corny joke that Scott just tosses out there. That's not acceptable. More with our guests, Representative Juliana Stratton and Scott Stantis. You can join our conversations if you have questions or comments for any of us. 312-981-7200. Again, that's 312-981-7200. If it's a call and tell us to shut up, well, that's not going to happen. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Scott Stantis. He is the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and Representative Juliana Stratton, who represents the 5th District right here in our area. And how far does that go? What neighborhoods do you
encompass? Oh, goodness. It starts at about Division and LaSalle.
Okay.
Heads all the way 1 Mag Mile, the Loop, South Loop, Bronzeville, a little bit of Washington Park, and all the way to 7900 South. So it's a very... kind of long and narrow district. Includes some of South Shore, mm-hmm. Greater Grand Crossing. So very diverse, probably one of the most diverse districts that we have.
Demographically, I'm guessing economically, you have the wide range.
Absolutely.
I mean, you
Absolutely.
Have, there are tent cities right down the stairs at on Illinois, and you have obviously these high rises.
That's right.
Very opulent, incredibly expensive apartments, condos, and homes.
Yeah, I kind of call it sort of a microcosm of the city of Chicago.
It is.
It kind of represents when people talk about the tale of two cities that we often are looked at as being. I think this district kind of represents that.
And what, when President Trump goes on national television, as he did last night during his interview, and lie about how there were two people shot and killed during President Obama's farewell address,
I'm sorry.
And this is on the heels of threatening the city of Chicago to send the feds in. What, this is something that has come up before about whether or not we need to take some sort of military action on neighborhoods in Chicago that are experiencing the most violence in the country, according to I mean, I don't even, is it are we the most violent city in the country?
Well, I mean, it's kind of hard when you, first of all, I've heard lots of reports that say that, you know, our surveys that rank cities that, you know, we've been called the murder capital and then of the country. And then you find out later, no, we're not. There's other states that per capita have much higher
rates. Population. Right.
We clearly have an issue with violence. There are many people who don't feel safe in their communities, but we know that there has been we have to look at the root causes of why these communities aren't safe right now. And, you know, what has contributed to that? So there's been a lot of disinvestment in these communities. We see, there's a lot of joblessness, there's poverty, there's, you know, issues with, you know, lack of quality education. And so there's lots of things that have contributed to the problems that we're seeing in these neighborhoods. So it's not a matter of, you know, bringing in more, you know, sort of, militarized forces. It's really about how do we get to the root causes? How do we deal with the trauma that a lot of these communities have experienced, sometimes from the policies that have been created? How do we make sure that we can provide quality education to all young people and children, regardless of the zip code that they live in? It really is about how do we create economic opportunities for families so that their parents, young people's parents, can go to work and you know, provide for their families. And so there's a lot that we have to look at. I don't think, increasing forces is something that community residents would be looking at and saying, yeah, that's what we want.
Right.
I mean, they want solutions, but I think that we have to look elsewhere.
Yeah, but isn't that, I mean, and playing devil's advocate here. I mean, mm-hmm. all of the solutions you talked about are absolutely correct, economic opportunity. Mm-hmm. But that's a long view. The short-term view is that I imagine many people in those neighborhoods would prefer to have to have a military or some kind of presence there that maintains order in that neighborhood. And that's a short-term thing. And don't forget, this is, you know, we're talking about a president who doesn't really think in the long term too much.
So you're saying that people who want to have, let's say it is the National Guard, that are people like, well, we need a quick solution. We'll worry about all the rest of the long-term solutions. Let's do a quick one. But what's the end game?
Well, let's establish.
Yes.
I'm sorry. No. I'm saying you can make an argument and say, I'm going to establish order now. And so you start the mean, and that's where you can build up. You can have the mentoring programs, you can have them and other programs that are really, really effective.
Yeah, but what does establishing order mean? I mean, I think that there are
people not shooting each other.
Yeah. So then we have to get to the root of why people get to that place. And we have to ask why there's so many guns in these communities for that to happen. Establishing order for a lot of communities, when you hear that term, and especially communities that have felt that they have been really kind of, for lack of a better term, over-policed.
Yes.
There's high rates of arrest, high rates of detention. And that has been something that has contributed to the destabilization of these communities. So to say, let's just bring in more and in a climate where there's already sort of a lack of trust. And I know that there are many departments around the country that are trying to work on that. That's something that I do through my work with the UIC Center for Public Safety and Justice, trying to work with law enforcement in increasing trust. But that's, I don't hear that narrative from community saying this is what we want. Do we want solutions? Absolutely. I don't hear people saying that the solution we want is to have military troops or other kinds of more enforcement to bring order. So that law and order narrative that we're hearing is not something that many communities are saying, yes, we want more of that.
That's
what they want is investment.
That's an important distinction. The people in those communities are not asking for the National Guard. They're the ones that have to live there. We are saying that we're going to send the troops arbitrarily because we think that all that everyone there, because once you send in the troops, everyone is a target.
Right, and it would be martial law down there, and that's
right.
Not America as far as I'm concerned.
So let me get to Chet, because Chet wanted to join the conversation as well. He's been on hold. Hi, Chet, what do you think?
Hi. Well, this is another topic you've gone into, but what I originally called to talk about was you've got the situation. Theoretically, it sounds like such a great idea to just stop paying people, and it'll cause the lawmakers to get their act together and
right.
pass a budget. Well, you know, that's fine, but look at the people that you're taking the money out of their pocket, at least short term. then all of a sudden they can't pay their mortgage. You know, some of these people may need that money to buy food for, you know. I think, you know, why don't we pass a law that says if this budget isn't ironed out by the end of the month, then the people involved, the lawmakers, are going to have to resign at the end of the year.
Right. I mean,
I don't know that that's the answer either. But I mean, I just don't think that. And I mean, I understand that when you don't have a budget, you just can't keep spending money. But at the same time, there's a lot of different ways we can go with this. There's a lot of creative things that can be done. We're talking about so many different problems that we have because that have been coming on for such a long time.
Right.
The other issue you're talking about with the crime in the city, I don't know. I'm just a truck driver, owner, operator. I don't have all the answers to this thing, and I don't claim to. But I do know one thing, we need like a 10-prong approach. We got to do a lot of different things to change the way things are. I was born and raised in the city, so I know a little bit about life in the city. And I think that one thing we could do is take a good look at some of the really good things that are going on in Detroit right now. 2-3 years ago, they were in such a bad shape. Now, I'll be the first to admit that their economy has gotten better. I mean, faster than Illinois even, okay?
You've given us a lot. We have to take a break here, but when we come back, we'll address. I so appreciate you joining our conversation. No worries. And stay safe on the roads.
There's just so much involved here.
There is. And there's a lot at stake, too. Thank you, Chet. Have a great night. Be safe. More after this on 720 WGN.